Hello, my name is Colleen Dietz.
And I'm Miranda Crandall. We are the Angels on Fire.
And this is Mormon Happy Hour. We are two post-Mormon gals bringing you the hottest topics in Mormonism. We will keep you current, keep you entertained, and keep you tuned in. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining us for episode 14. We have a lot to cover today, lots of heavy, well, pretty much one heavy topic. Yeah. So we're going to do our best to give you some breaks. We're going to take little intermissions here and there and throw in our life pro tips and some other another funny Instagram account that Miranda found. And we're going to make it through this topic.
So things might be a little bit out of order today.
That's by strategy.
Everybody, yeah, this is on purpose. So we can all take a breath.
Okay. So. I'll run down the agenda. So here's what we have in mind. So in case you haven't heard, Mormon Leaks released a recorded audio conversation between Joseph L. Bishop, who was the MTC president. It was 33 years ago. And so they released an audio recording conversation between President Bishop and a victim that is accusing him of sexual assault when she was a missionary in the MTC. And it's graphic. It's a really big deal.
Well, it's more than accusing. He admits to these allegations. He admits these sexual inappropriateness.
Yes. Not only with her does he fully confess and apologize, but he also perhaps inadvertently confesses to several other instances with other victims of sexual assault throughout, even beginning when he was in the bishopric, which is before the time that he was the mission president, or before he was the MTC president, and also another instance when he was a mission president and a woman lived with them, and he molested her when she was living
when she was living with them.
So, I mean, she is there accusing, but he is also agreeing and confessing and apologizing through the entire episode. And so today what we're going to do is we're going to go over basically a lot of the things that have transpired since that leak dropped on Monday, including newspaper articles that have come out, further information that has come to light, to give you a better idea of what we're dealing with, and then kind of handle the reactions, the ramifications of what this leak means, how the church has responded to it.
Right.
And since this is...
And our interpretations of everything as well. And,
right.
And your interpretations of everything.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to get some of our opinion. And if you ethically disagree with something that we say, that's fine. We want to hear about it because only through conversation really can we understand one another. So we definitely are open to conversation and disagreements. That's absolutely fine. So we're going to throw in this episode our life pro tip. We have a couple drinks to talk about. So just hang tight. Take breaks. Line up your coping skills and we can make it through this.
Yes.
Okay. So some things that I wanted to talk about is basically the press coverage. So I just wanted to kind of run through that. So the day that it came out, shortly after it dropped, it was taken up. There was a great article in Religion News that kind of covered the recording itself and the confessions that occurred in the recording. The Daily Herald in Utah picked it up. Fox News in Utah picked it up. Those articles were not as informative. And then there was a much anticipated article by the Salt Lake Tribune that finally did come out last night, and they were able to obtain a police report and also contact the victim, and they were the ones that were able to contact her bishop back in 87 as well and get some statements from him. So that's a great article where they really went the extra mile, mm-hmm. and they dug and they found a lot of background about what was going on in this case. So props to Peggy Fletcher Stack.
So the abuse itself happened back in the 80s. It was reported in the 80s to her bishop,
mm-hmm.
which nothing came of it.
And she also reported in, I'm not sure if she made any reports between 87 and 2010, but in 2010, she called Salt Lake and she reported to Salt Lake. She's been trying to figure out if anything occurred, if he was ever confronted. She wanted to know from Salt Lake, was he ever disciplined? And so I wanted to highlight the behavior that the church has taken. Obviously, nothing happened in 87 when she spoke to her bishop and then was referred to Carlos Assay of the 70. Nothing happened. He wasn't disciplined. And in the recording, he says that no one approached him at all, that he's never discussed these things with anyone at the church, his behaviors. Oh, and in that phone conversation in 2010, when she's furious, asking, has anything ever come of it? And she actually makes a very calculated and interesting tactic. I don't fault her at all for doing it, but she basically threatens his life, to which they immediately call the police. And I'm like, you do know how to call the police.
Right. And you do know how to report something.
Right. And
only
so
when it's their guy.
When the church came out and did a press release following this leak being dropped, they mentioned that they called the police in 2010 and they reported what she had reported. Well, the church was caught in that lie. They're lying because the police report was dug up. The officer that took that report and the detective that responded basically said, oh, well, we did respond because she threatened his life and we interviewed all the parties involved. But the harassment charges that she spoke of were never brought to our attention by the church and were never investigated.
So they never really reported anything about the sexual abuse
No.
to the police.
No, nope, never, right. Not at all, not once.
So what happens next?
She makes this recording in 2017, December of 2017, and December of 2017 is when she makes the recording, and she makes the recording under the guise of she flies down to Phoenix where he is residing, meets with him, and
is that known that he is in Phoenix? Wow.
Yes. According to his Facebook page before it got shut down, he lives in Phoenix, Arizona.
Wow.
And it's common knowledge that that's where the recording occurred because it goes into play with the two-party recording law that we haven't talked about yet. So she makes the recording under the guise of writing an article. She's writing an article about well-known mission presidents and kind of their service and their importance.
Something very innocent, very...
And it plays into, like, it makes him comfortable. It plays into his ego. He knows that it's being recorded and that she's writing everything down because, you know, she's going with the guys.
He knows that this is an interview. They talk about in this interview what stories we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I read more of the beginning and then stopped.
Well, I did listen.
Yeah, it was a lot of, he knew exactly what was going on.
Yes. And so about 40 minutes into the recording is when she confronts him and says, well, I wanted to ask you specifically about some things that happened while you were serving as the president of the MTC, specifically some things that happened with me. And she says, do you remember me? And he says, no. And she kind of does, you know, my name back then. And she kind of tries to trigger his memory. And as soon as she says her name back then he remembers, oh, yeah, I remember you. And so then she confronts him and says, you really hurt me. I want you to know that you really hurt me. And he says, he immediately starts apologizing. Before anything has come out, before any accusations are made, he starts apologizing. And she says, I don't even hate you. And he says, you should.
And that alone, he knows exactly what she's talking about.
Yeah.
It's not about you hurt my feelings because you didn't pick on me to bear my testimony. He knows exactly what she is talking about.
Yeah, it's a very clear, this isn't the way you respond if you're innocent. If this is something that has never crossed your mind, if it's a behavior that's never occurred, if you have never hurt someone
in such a huge way,
then you would never respond in this way once someone just barely begins to confront you about it. But he does show like lots of remorse and lots of guilt. And the entire interview, it's a 2-hour and 44-minute interview between the two of them, and he kind of runs this roller coaster of remorse and guilt and apology, and then I can't help it, I'm an addict, it's because my wife wasn't being sexual with me and perhaps things would have been different if she was having sex with me, and then back up to I'm so very sorry, I'm a terrible person. And at the very end she relates him, she says basically if all these things were to come to light, then you would be the Harvey Weinstein of the LDS church. And he says, yes, I would. And then later on in the conversation he compares himself to going to like an AA type meeting where he introduces himself and he says, hi, I'm Joe. I'm a sexual predator.
He knows that he's a sexual predator.
And I also want to point out the difference between an addiction and being a predator. If you have a sex addiction, a lot of times those type of things are handled, or, you know, those will carry out in pornography or strip clubs or, you know, massage parlors or, you know, prostitutes, things like that. Those are all symptoms of a sex addiction. To carry out abusive assaults and manipulative behaviors, that's a predator. And to me, that's a very, those are two very different things.
So you don't think he is, has an addiction? You don't think he is a sex addict or of that nature?
I don't think you can call it a sex addiction. I think you can, you need to call him a predator.
Because, I mean, if you look at it from a different point of view, like someone who's a pedophile, mm-hmm. that could be looked at as an addiction. Somebody is addicted to that type of behavior, just as someone who is addicted to setting things on fire kind of thing. He's addicted to...
I disagree.
Being a predator. I'm just being a voice of reason here. I'm not, maybe, not expressing my personal opinions. I am being a devil's advocate.
I don't know. I even see pedophilia as, I mean, I spent a lot of time working within the sex offender treatment program in the prison in Utah. And I kind of view through their clinical take on pedophilia, it's a sexual preference. And so I see it as a sexual preference, not as a or sexual orientation rather than an addiction. And the reason why it comes out in, you know, the way it does, I don't see it as an addiction, maybe perhaps a compulsion. I would agree with the term compulsion, but the behaviors themselves are so abhorrent and illegal and against societal norms that they're going to have to behave in ways that are more subversive to satisfy mm-hmm. those compulsions.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that I would use the word addiction in any of that, but that's just me.
No, this is great. This is great. I heavily trust your opinion because of your experiences and your time that you've spent in this topic.
Yeah.
You know, I, besides a handful of conversations like ever, you know, I don't talk about this kind of stuff, and neither do most people. And so coming from you, who is experienced, you've talked about this at length and multiple times. Unfortunately, it is unfortunate, but it can be beneficial to myself and everyone else who doesn't have experience with it in these types of situations where we need to dissect what's happened and you have experience in this topic.
I don't think I'm an expert. Don't read that as I'm an expert in anything. But from my experience, that's what I have surmised.
That's very interesting.
So just to maybe break the mood, I did want to, we'll take a little, should we play some intermission music?
Sure. Damn it.
And today we have a special guest. I hope I can say friend of the show.
Yes, absolutely.
We have with us today the Reddit user Relevant Life, who, if you happen to spend any time on either ex-Mormon Reddit or atheism?
Atheism.
The atheism sub on Reddit. He is very active in both of those subs, and he makes excellent posts. I love everything that he does. So thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's about damn time. So we wanted to bring on Relevant Life because he's been making some great posts about this particular issue, which is the leak involving Joseph Bishop and the recording of his confession to multiple instances of sexual misconduct, ranging from molestation to inappropriate requests to possibly rape. We're not really sure, but that's kind of all that's covered in the recording.
Right.
So, Mr. Relevant Life, in your interest, what are some topics that you think that we should be addressing today?
One of the biggest takeaways for me personally has been the update to the Tribune article where it her former bishop, who she reported to in the 80s, says that he never reported it to any higher up because he didn't take it seriously. And this is a big point that people have been making recently, especially considering the petition that Sam Young started, is getting more training for bishops in order to be able to deal with situations like this, to deal with abuse that has been reported. And this guy, I mean, I don't know how much has changed since the 80s, but this guy completely neglected to even tell anybody that a sexual assault had been reported to him.
Right.
And that's something that should never happen. If somebody comes to a bishop and says that they have been assaulted by a church leader, it doesn't need to stay in the bishop's office. It needs to be reported. It needs to be dealt with. It can't just be ignored.
Right. Absolutely. He even made a comment, since he did go on record with the Salt Lake Tribune, and he explained his disregard by saying something about how her logic was, it didn't flow, it didn't seem, like, basically that her story was kind of like helter-skelter, and it didn't, so therefore it didn't sound, like it was truthful. And that
sexual abuse victims have been traumatized to begin with. You can't expect them to be calm in a situation like that.
Right. And that's where his lack of training is glaringly obvious, because here he is discounting her story because, like, oh, well, it seems all over the place, so it must not be true.
Yeah.
It's going to be a number one thing to look for in, a report of sexual assault or abuse, is that the victim is going to be, like you said, relevant life. They're going to be all over the place. They're not going to have it all together. It's going to sound...
Yeah.
Crazy and far-fetched, and that does not take away from the truthfulness and the accuracy of the report.
Right.
At all. But yeah, I don't want to criticize individual victims and how they deal with situations, because everybody's story is different. The way every victim wants to handle it and how their healing process, that's an individual thing. There's no cookie-cutter mold for how you deal with a situation like this. So if a victim feels as if a settlement will help them heal, then more power to them. But I do think it's an important conversation to have, talking about how backroom deals, dealing with it through an NDA, getting paid off, and then everything being swept under the rug. That's an important conversation to have in regard to whether it helps further the conversation that people are having about sexual assault right now. If it never comes to the light, if it's never made public, is it really being dealt with? Are things really changing just by paying somebody off and sweeping it under the rug? It doesn't seem like that's a way that things are going to change, in my opinion. But like I said, every victim is different. The healing process for everyone is different. If somebody feels like a settlement is going to help them heal, that should be their individual right to do that. But it is important to have a conversation about whether or not that helps move this movement forward.
I completely agree.
So just a little background for our listeners. The victim of Joseph Bishop is it current? She's currently going through a settlement.
According to the Tribune, she was in settlement negotiations, but that's just what was reported by the Tribune.
Yes.
Right. So the Tribune is reporting that she is going through settlement negotiations in order to sign a NDA, non-disclosure agreement, to keep quiet and get money, basically. Is that right?
Well, the NDA signing, that would be something that we're assuming goes along with a settlement. Part of a settlement would be, we'll pay you money if you agree not to talk about it. So that's right. what normally would entail a settlement. And she told the Salt Lake Tribune that she did not authorize the leak to be published, and that it is now hurting her chances of making a settlement.
And if I were in a settlement, I would say that too, whether or not it's true.
Right, right.
You know, and again, this is not any, I'm not trying to shit on this woman for doing what she needs to do, just like Mr. Relevant Life has said.
I completely agree with everything that Relevant Life has been saying about the healing process. And if you look back through her timeline, even starting in 1987, I think it was, when she first reported to her bishop, and to Carlos Asay of the 70.
All these different people.
And then, most recently in 2010, she calls Salt Lake and she reports. I think there's like three different police reports that are accounted for in newspaper articles right now. Like, in every single one of these cases, she has been failed by the system. She was never able to achieve justice. And so, like Relevant Life was saying, if this is what she needs for healing, is to have this final settlement with the church, like, then that's what she needs. But I absolutely agree that this process, especially when it comes to sexual abuse, of making a cash settlement and then agreeing not to speak about it, cannot bring about significant change
with the movement. Yeah.
And it just further protects abusers, in my mind, and it further protects...
But the counterargument to that would be that if the church is constantly having to pay out settlements like this, they might be more motivated in the future to deal with situations correctly so that they don't have to continue paying out all these settlements. But the church has endless amounts of money, so they could do this for, the next couple of decades if they wanted to.
right?
But and still make no change. But there are good arguments on both sides to it. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I just don't see them. I don't see them changing. I feel like if they can pay off instead of be upfront about it, then they're just going to keep doing that forever and never ever make any change.
Right. The public shame might be more motivation. Than losing money constantly.
Absolutely. I think that is absolutely the truth. And another thing that I wanted to kind of talk about is within hours of this leak being leaked by Mormon Leaks, or this recording being leaked by Mormon Leaks, within hours, the church has had this recording since January. As soon as it was leaked publicly, they pulled his books from Deseret Book. They pulled his author bio from Deseret Book. He cannot be found on Deseret Book. They scrubbed him. His Facebook page was taken down, and he pretty much, like, they were eliminating him quietly wherever they could. Which, I mean, his Facebook page being taken down, that's probably a really good security measure for anyone being accused of sexual assault, because, you know, there's a lot of risk of retribution out there. But to take his books down and his author bio, that's clearly a PR move in my mind, that they're going.
Yeah, and they didn't do it in 2010 when they were approached about it, but they suddenly did it now when it was in the news.
Right. And that clearly sends a message that they want to scrub his existence from, you know, that they have been affiliating with him, which I think is super shady. Someone also, I think it was Jonathan Streeter, posted on Facebook, I happened to catch it, that in their press release, they refer to him as Joseph Bishop, and they dropped the L. Whereas in every other press release, when he's been mentioned or quoted or called to a prestigious calling within the church, it's always had the L, which is kind of like a Mormon thing. All of our, you know, general authorities are always referenced by their middle initial as well. And as soon as he was accused of this, the press release dropped the L, which a lot of people think is pretty significant. That they're distancing themselves from him.
But they haven't excommunicated him.
Of course not.
Or punished him in any way.
No, they just removed the respectful L.
Yeah.
The respectful middle initial.
I just think that the biggest takeaway from all of this is how desperately the church needs to change the way they approach sexual assault and reporting in general. The bishops and state presidents and mission presidents, they need to have more training in regard to how to deal with like this. They need to be mandated to report up the chain of command. There can't be another situation like this. If someone reports a sexual assault to a bishop, it needs to go somewhere. It doesn't need to be ignored. And that's the biggest takeaway here.
I completely agree. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to stop
thank
by.
Thank you so much.
And chat with us
no
today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll have you back again.
All right.
See ya. So I did have an announcement that I wanted to bring up, slightly on topic, unfortunately, but it's different. Sam Young and his Protect the Children campaign, their final march is on March 30th. And I believe now that they are marching from the library to the church office building on Friday, March 30th, to present the petition, the signed petition, and the Sacred Stories of Sacred Children, which is all of the stories that have been submitted to him with people's experiences with worthiness interviews with bishops. He has put out that there is a deadline to get your story into the books. Deadline for printing is March 25th. So if you have a story and you feel able to write down any portion of it, small or long, it can completely be anonymous. If you can submit it, if you feel like that's something that you can do, please do it. And the deadline is March 25th. And he said he's going to be printing 15 copies, one for each member of the Quorum of the 12 and the First Presidency with their names embossed on it. So they all get a personal copy. And those are the only print that is going to occur of these stories. That's it. He's not distributing it anywhere else. It's just for the Quorum of the 12 and the First Presidency. So the march is on March 30th. If you can attend in Salt Lake, please do. He wants at least 1,000 people to show up. And there have been lots of vendors who have signed on to provide. I think their sandwich is being provided.
Wow.
And some other lions being provided. And I love that not only that, you know, you can maybe get things if you go, but that people, that businesses are supporting him and promoting this. So I thought that was wonderful. And he also has introduced that if you can't make it to Salt Lake, then he will help you to plan a local march, ideally at your local temple, unless that there is a better location that you can think of. So if you have the means to schedule and participate in a local march, then please register on his website and march in your local hometown and get people to kind of join in on the movement. He will help with media so that you can be recognized as supporting the movement. So if you can, please do that. So and the tie-in, basically, is that Sam's petition is asking for these interviews.
Children, minors.
With minors and adults that address sexual matters. It's inappropriate. It needs to stop. And also to promote more training and better policy when it comes to abuses that have been reported to ecclesiastical leaders and how to handle that. So that's kind of how it ties into this.
There was an incident with Joseph Bishop where he was alone with a woman. And so Sam's march is exactly trying to fight this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I think that Joseph Bishop's situation, it was different. He was already breaking rules that were already in place.
Absolutely.
However, rules that are not in place with teenagers and even children, and it's inappropriate.
I think if there were rules in place, then more people around the situation will be aware of what looks weird. And if a man, ecclesiastical leader, is pulling another person in for a one-on-one situation, then it may catch the eye of someone because it is now against policy to do something like this. Even though creepers are going to creep and predators are still going to be predators, I think more awareness overall in the community that we don't allow these type of things will help to safeguard more people, more children. Right.
So I just found, yesterday, I found this new Instagram called Book of Mormon Stories, and it is hilarious. Again, you know, just tons of ironic and hilarious things to laugh at. One of my favorites, I'm gonna show you. So it looks like a scene from The Shining, and it has Joseph Smith's face going through the door. I think this picture was in the trailer picture for the movie, but it has, instead of the other main character's face, it has Joseph Smith's face coming through, and he says, "Here's Joey," and it's an arrow pointing to the woman of Helen Mar Kimball. So it's playing on the Joseph Smith is coming after Helen Mar Kimball thing. So, and the caption was, "Glad I wasn't a woman in Nauvoo." So, whew. Let me see what else they have that I just loved. All right. The most recent post that they have is a picture of a girl hugging her what looks like her sister at the MTC. And it says, there's a thought bubble or a speech bubble that says, "Good luck, honey. I hope you don't get raped in the MTC basement by a priesthood leader before leaving to a third world country to push a religion on people when they don't want it." So it's like, oh, great. Wonderful. Little bit of irony for you. And I will also mention this one because we talked about it in a previous episode. It's the "Don't Be the Licked Cupcake." It's a Mormon ad of someone licking a cupcake. "Because nobody wants a whorish prostitute who dry humped her boyfriend once. You are to have no normal human sexual experiences until your awkward wedding night." So that's my Book of Mormon Stories clip.
It's Book of Moron.
Oh, it's Book of Moron. I didn't even notice. Oh, my God. Okay, Book of Moron Stories. My bad. Oh, that is even funnier. Well, on their picture, their main picture, it looks like a book of the Book of Mormon. It says the Book of Moron still. That's amazing.
It got even better.
It got even better. Yes. Thank you for reading when I didn't. I didn't read, apparently.
And then it says Molly Mormon is the name.
Yes, the name for it. They're just hilarious.
Excellent.
Tons of funny clips.
So Deseret News published an article that was not very nice to the woman who made the recording. It was kind of a character attack. Not kind of, it was. At the beginning of the article, they mention that she is a former member, which I don't think is very relevant. And then they mention that she briefly served a mission, indicating to all the TBMs out there that she didn't faithfully complete her mission. I don't know that I would be able to. How could anyone complete a mission when you've been sexually assaulted by the president of the MTC
right before you go?
So they throw in those two little jabs at the beginning. Then they start what I, in my opinion, is doxing, where they are releasing personal information about this woman that Mormon Leaks has painstakingly scrubbed out of the recording.
Right.
So they start dropping all of the cities in which she resided and what years she resided in those cities, because they have collected the police reports in those cities. In another article, they talk about how she has changed her name. So there's a name change to be made aware of. Like, all this superfluous information that isn't necessary, isn't relevant.
Right. It's not about her at all, really. I mean, no. It's her story. I will give you that. But the point, the meat of the story is that an MTC president raped somebody and molested somebody.
Right. And that's what needs to be the focus. And that's what the problem that I have with a lot of these articles is, they make the focus on her when the focus should 100% be on Joseph Bishop and the church for how they did or did not react.
The focus should be on, the negative, the crime.
Yes. The crime, not the victim. She deserves, and out of respect, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about her character, yes, good or bad, because out of respect, this story, she deserves her privacy.
Right.
The story is about Joseph Bishop.
Honestly, the actions of somebody whose life has been ripped up like that, I mean, you can understand any negative, poor choices that she's made, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's trauma causes a lot of erratic behavior or methods in which you will attempt to be heard. That's all completely normal when it comes to recovering from trauma.
Yeah.
So also within the Deseret News makes reference to the fact that she is not the source of the recording, and that Mormon Leaks recorded or released this without her consent, which has caused lots of waves. And being a victim myself, being a survivor, it was kind of upsetting to hear that particular snippet of information, because although I do trust Mormon Leaks as an organization, I do trust the men who make those decisions, both Ryan and Ethan, I wholeheartedly trust their ethics and their judgment, but I did question. It felt like, well, if she's truly if she's a victim and this was published without her consent, then she's losing control of her narrative, and that felt wrong to me. And so it was something that I kind of pushed on a little bit here and there to try and get more information. And a lot more information came out in the Salt Lake Tribune article, which I was grateful for. And it kind of gave us some insight into the possible settlement with the church and why she may not have been willing at that time to release the recording. But it also does make mention to the fact that she herself said that she provided the recording to several of her friends. And to me, at that point, that's when she kind of gave control of her narrative away. Whether Mormon Leaks was able to contact her or her attorney, that information and probably so much more information, we don't know. And so we cannot critique the call that Mormon Leaks made, because we do not have the information that they have. And so that's my take on it.
My thought is, she put it out there, and so you do lose a little bit of what happens with how it's taken, how it's received. However, she gave it to friends. She didn't take it to a news station. And so I think in that case, in the scenario, if she did not want Mormon Leaks to leak it, then she was wronged, yes. Because she gave it to friends to provide this information, not to be shared to the world. But sharing it to friends, that's a personal thing. Originally, I don't think it was released against her wishes. But if it was, then she was wronged.
Whether she was wronged by her friends or by Mormon Leaks is we don't know.
Her friends, I would say.
I would say her friends.
Because her friends. If she didn't want it shared with other people, and her friends shared it with other people, she was wronged by her friends, and not by Mormon Leaks. Although that's a side effect. That's a byproduct of being wronged. That's what happens.
And I mean, this whole conversation and our opinions is solely based on little snippets of information that we can glean from what the Salt Lake Tribune was able to kind of churn up.
Yeah.
And so, like, we don't know, the identities of the sources. We don't know if it came, if those her friends that she
was
provided
against
to,
her wishes or not.
We don't know any of that. We're just speculating.
Well, and it says she is making the case, right? She's got a settlement going on against the LDS Church, right? And it came to light that she said it was against her wishes.
Right.
Is that right? In my opinion, that may or may not be true. She's saying that. She's going with that. I would say it too, whether or not it's true.
Right.
If I wanted to win that settlement. And that's her business. That's her deal. And I don't even care to discuss the ethics of that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Because
that's her. This is her
that
trauma.
Ethical problem is right here. The other ethical problem is that she was sexually assaulted by a trusted leader in the MTC.
And that it wasn't handled properly for 33 years.
For 33 years.
So that's the bigger issue.
Right.
But I just wanted to kind of throw that out, that I think that there's a lot of unknowns and we can't really make calls right or wrong in how it was all handled. But as an organization, Mormon Leagues takes it upon themselves to be transparent. And with the contents being as powerful and eye-opening as they are, and the power that they have to enact change for the better, I think is really had a lot to do with their decision.
Right. So now we have all this information about the MTC president. What do we do with this information now? How are we going to move on now? How is this going to affect people now? There's already been a lot of church members who've resigned and left the church on ex-Mormon Reddit. It was heartbreaking to see how many believing members went to the ex-Mormon Reddit page for help. They were brokenhearted and said, this happened. How could this have happened? My whole life is... You know, they're questioning everything that we've all been through. And and it's heartbreaking to see so many in a row from such a heartbreaking story as well. You know, so a lot of members have left the church. A lot of members have ignored the information. A lot of members have been defensive. I've seen defensive reactions from LDS people.
And lots of character assassinations of the woman who made the recording.
To be honest, I'm not too surprised that they're doing that. Mm-hmm. Not only have I seen that happen in other scenarios, but again, to them, this guy was called of God and it wasn't his fault and blah, 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 victim blaming, you know, she's blaming her and then blaming, you know, her character, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not surprised that that happened. But these are reactions from the LDS community that I have seen online.
In my personal life, I shared the story with my parents, who are definitely TBM, and they reacted very, very well. I was so grateful that they were able to sympathize with all of my feelings and my disgust for the situation and horrified that it wasn't appropriately handled. So that was refreshing. I also, my little sister missionaries came yesterday to my house to help me do the dishes, and I shared it with them. And as I was sharing it, like, I kind of caught myself halfway through and I realized, oh my gosh, like, they are this woman. They're in the same exact place in their lives, literally, that this woman was in.
Yeah.
As I'm
they
sharing
were
it.
Just they at were, the MTC.
They were just there. And here I am telling them all about this mission president who sexually assaulted a woman and all of the things that went along with it and all of the other confessions that he made in that recording.
Yeah.
And how it has destroyed her. I kind of like caught myself and realized that halfway through, and then it just got even more serious because of who I was telling. And they, of course, reacted exactly the same. They were horrified. They were disgusted. And then as, you know, I began to talk about how it was handled incorrectly, their automatic response was, well, no one's perfect. And then I was just like, ugh.
Well, and I think this excuse and this rationale is not only to try and tell you, but it's for themselves.
Their own protection.
It's for their own psyche protection.
Their own denial. Their own
sanctity
of denial. Should we take another break?
Yes.
Break time!
So I have pre-mixed drinks. This one is, the brand is called Buzz Balls. They're a little ball drink thing. Mine is Forbidden Apple. And Colleen, what flavor do you have?
I have Peach Balls.
You need to drink some balls.
Your favorite, right? just kidding. The Forbidden Apple, that sounds kind of so like mine, Adam and Eve a little.
Oh, yeah, that's totally. Oh, yeah. So funny. This one is vodka and peach schnapps with artificial flavors and colors.
Schnapps.
Mm. I'm going to get buzzed and hyper, right?
Yeah. Mine is vodka with apple and lemon juices, natural flavors. So, there is 15% alcohol by volume in the 200 milliliters.
What would you say this is like? How many shots would this be? Like 3 or 4?
Well, it's mixed with something, so it might only be...
Technically a mixed drink.
Do you remember the percentage on our little pre-shots?
No.
I don't remember either. I think it's more than those, though.
So, yeah, 15%, that's pretty much your average cocktail.
Yeah.
We're going to do this.
All right.
Ready?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Mmm.
Ooh.
Whew.
Ah.
That is harsh.
I don't know if I tasted anything. I'm pretty much just felt that.
I tasted a lot of stuff.
I felt that. I don't know if I tasted it.
It's like now I have this aftertaste of sticky sweet.
Okay. Tum.
Well, today we also have another guest, Leslie Butterfield. We are so happy to have her on the show as well. I have come to know her on Facebook, and she has some wonderful input on these type of issues. She actually has a website entitled unrighteousdemeaning.org. And Leslie, do you want to give us a little bit of an explanation on what that website is all about?
Sure. Hi, I'm happy to be here and offer some of my thought. The website is really for victims or survivors that have experienced ecclesiastical abuse or spiritual abuse in general. We know that, you know, sharing their story is an important part of their healing and recovery process. So we wanted to give them an outlet for sharing their stories that they can, you know, be heard, they're validated, they're honored in that space. And the stories are anonymous. You know, we can guarantee that they're not going to be shared. The personal details and the names won't be shared. We're trying to give the survivors a way to speak to their feelings and their experiences.
Right. And give them a voice as well.
Exactly.
Yes. And that
thank you so much for sharing about that.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that type of experience or avenue to share your experiences, not only does it help us as survivors to kind of cope with what has occurred in our lives, but it also gives strength to a community of survivors. And it kind of, you know, together we're stronger. And I love that you're providing that avenue. So thank you so much.
Exactly. Yep.
So about this Joseph L. Bishop sex abuse scandal. So you've been following the news with all of the everything that's come to light in the past week or so.
I have.
So what are your strongest takeaways or issues that you think that really should be brought to light in terms of this issue?
Well, yeah, it's been an interesting week. I, of course, knew about the recording the night before it broke kind of in the mainstream news. I know Ethan, I've talked to him from Mormon Leaks, and I saw it, you know, when it was posted on Mormon Leaks and in the progressive crowd, obviously we knew mm-hmm. about it. And so it's been an interesting process watching it unfold. And I have to describe it as I feel like I've been in a war. I feel like I've been in this battle where, you know, one blow after another, and it's just bewildering. It's shocking. It's re-traumatizing. Mm-hmm. And I was even telling someone yesterday, I said, I don't know why I feel so tired. I'm so fatigued. And, she told me, she said, this is why, you know, this is why you feel this way, because it's in the news. As survivors, we are confirmed in our feelings that the church just doesn't seem to really care much about our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
what has kind of unfolded this week has confirmed that for me. It showed me kind of the gaslighting, the manipulation, the little white lies that they're coming out with, the rationalization, the victim blaming, the shaming, you know, it's all of that is like been compounded one after another into this process this week with the news.
Yeah. I want to ask you, because of your background with your website, have you heard stories like this a lot? Is this very common in this kind of situation?
Yes. Yes, it is. So on the website, we have stories that range from blatant sex abuse to actual spousal abuse that has been condoned by church leaders, racism, all sorts of stuff like that.
What can we do moving forward, you know?
Okay, yeah. So I have a couple of input, I guess. One is the credibility that you need to have to speak to these issues, it seems, within the church. You have to be a righteous, active, faithful, Temple Recommend holding member. But I feel like you also have to be a man.
Yes.
You know, and there may be a few things of those of that that I can change. You know, I could start going to church. I could get a Temple Recommend. I could do all those things, but I can't do everything and be authentic. And I can't cause change and still be who I am in dealing with the abuse that has been caused to me or others. So I think that there's an element of authenticity that is not honored within mm-hmm. the system itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is structural changes, you know, to be honest. How can you change the culture of a system? You have to change the structure of it, really. You have to, you know, there's three ways that cultures get changed. One is by introducing a new element. The second is by discovering new information. And the third is by diffusion of other cultures that have changed. some of those things may look like in the church, you know, introducing a new element would be like, you know, providing a victim hotline, providing a checks and balance system within the church for women, for, you know, minors.
Any kind of support, really.
Exactly. The problem that we have right now is that it's only a priesthood holder or an ecclesiastical leader that can call the hotline as it is. What if that priesthood leader or ecclesiastical leader is the abuser?
Exactly.
You know, you can't just show up at a different church and tell your story and, you know, have that bishop administer to you.
Yeah.
You can start incorporating lessons into the church's manuals. You could start talking about things that are important, healthy boundaries, and owning your own spiritual authority. We're encouraged to sort of give a part of our spiritual authority over to a spiritual leader. And I don't think fundamentally Mormonism was not really founded on that to begin with, you know, so I think there could certainly be change and healthy communication, you know, effective coping mechanisms is another, you know, healing from trauma. What is the trauma response? What does it look like? That's another problem that we've seen is this woman, the survivor, being sort of berated for trying to find out if anything ever happened or for being, some people said that she was angry and some people thought that it was inappropriate what she was doing. And knowing the responses to trauma and knowing what trauma causes in the long run, I don't see any problem with what she has done or what she said or anything like that. And in fact, it's basically right along the lines of what anyone would do, a normal response to her abnormal situation.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Leslie, for telling us all your thoughts about this issue.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So there's one part of the recording that we didn't talk about that I want to bring up is that Joseph Bishop admits in the recording that he had told the people, his higher-ups, that he had this problem. People knew, the people in charge who were calling him to callings, knew that he was a sexual predator.
And she says to him, like, and she's like, wait, that was before this calling. And he says, yes. And that was before this calling. And he says, yes. So he admitted all this sexual misconduct. And then he's called to be a mission president. He's called to be the president of the MTC. And she says to him, you never should have been put in these positions. And he says, no, I shouldn't have. When he was a mission president, he self-reported in the recording that at one point he was a mission president in Argentina. He had a couple sisters who were struggling very greatly with mental illness issues. One was depressed and suicidal and was making threats to kill herself while she was on the mission. And he was he was obviously going through his own struggles. And he requested of the regional leader, I would assume, for more funds to bring in a professional mental health counselor to provide support for these sisters and for himself. And he was turned down because it kind of harkens his I forget, I'll have to fact check myself on who it was that gave him this information, but basically the response was, we have been counseled following a talk that was provided by Boyd K. Packer that we are not to seek out mental health providers, that we are to utilize bishops because they are called of God and they rely on inspiration from God to solve these problems. Right. Use your bishop.
And I think that's a move to protect themselves against allegations like Joseph Bishop's, you know,
quite possibly
and other abuses.
I think it's both. One, they truly believe that. And two, it's going to cover their ass to keep it all in the family and under their control.
Right.
Because you avoid mandated reporters and you can keep things real quiet.
Right. They're the ones who also need to be under fire. We've mentioned many times it wasn't handled correctly. How could it be handled correctly in the future? We make a policy that any reports of abuse in with the bishop's office
reporters
or anything must be reported to the police. And that is not currently a thing.
No.
Which is disgusting. It's not currently mandated to report abuse to the police by the church. The church could include background checks. When somebody admits to being a sexual predator or admits to having them having a problem, you don't say, are you sorry for what you did? Okay, go on. Go on.
Serve in the young men's.
That's ridiculous and disgusting. And so those people are...
It's reckless and dangerous.
Just as bad as the actual predator.
To knowingly put a predator in with a vulnerable population, I cannot excuse that behavior.
Right.
On any front.
So on Facebook, I had a discussion. I said, does anyone think this leak will spur any change, or will it be like every other leak slash story like this? Meaning that a lot of times it gets pushed under the rug and forgotten. Nothing really happens. We have all of these policies we've just talked about that could be implemented. They could have been implemented 33 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't.
Mm-hmm.
To assume that 33 years ago was the first time that it happened is completely ignorant mm-hmm. and naive. It's been going on.
It started since with Joseph Smith,
So, will it be like all these other stories? One comment on that was, it definitely spurred attempted change. If the church really knew about this in January, then pushed the two-party consent law change in February, the timeline seemed pretty damning to me.
Yes, that's another thing we didn't talk about.
Right. There was that they tried to make the bill where you have to have two-party consent to record
because they were provided... This woman provided the recording of herself with Bishop in January. They started pushing for that legislature in Utah in February. And originally we all thought it had something to do with Mike Norton and Sam Young and Mike encouraging people to record their bishop interviews. That's what we thought it was about. But no.
It was a lot more disgusting than that.
Yes.
So, and that's what I replied to him. I'm hoping for positive change like Sam Young's petition, but I'm afraid it's just wishful thinking. His response was that reading the comments on the LDS Living Post makes me very unhopeful.
Unfortunately.
Like what I talked about earlier with
the
TBM responses. And it is disheartening, although they're not the ones who can make actual change happen. Anyways, as awful as it is for people like Sam Young, whether liberal Mormons or millennial Mormons, to have their opinions rarely create any change. But when those things get global attention,
media
attention, and if it can blow up big enough, I think that the upper management could change their minds, could force their hand, mm-hmm. just like it happened with the blacks in priesthood.
And unfortunately, what that means is that we as victims have to have the strength to speak. And it is so hard to find that strength within yourself. And if that's not somewhere that you are, then just know that no one, and I am not going to judge you. You need to take care of yourself. But if you can, and there will be people to support you. I was just telling you this earlier today. I felt like with my BYU rape experience, I felt like that was the good that could come of it, is I could share it and that I could push for change to happen.
Right.
And I feel like it's unfortunate that that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Is us victims, you know, being vulnerable again.
Having to trudge through that. Yeah. Being vulnerable again. Yes.
Yes. And opening ourselves up again. But I am so grateful that I did. I have grown a lot personally as a survivor. I'm now at a place where I feel much more at peace with it.
Yeah.
So it kind of kickstarted me into like the healing process that I needed to take anyway.
Right.
And it made a difference because I was able to add my experience to those of so many others.
Right.
So
yes.
Thank you for even considering sharing your experience.
And I just want to add that you're not alone.
No.
Colleen has suffered abuse. I've suffered abuse. Think about everybody who participated in the hashtag MeToo
mm-hmm.
movement.
And if you're not a survivor, if you're not a victim, then please be part of the community that supports survivors.
Right.
And supports them to be vulnerable and tell their stories and catch them and hold them and keep them safe while they relive this trauma. Please be part of that.
Yes.
I think that's the hugest thing, is changing our society to be one that supports and accepts victims instead of shames them.
Right.
That's a huge change that we need to be a part of right here,
in
right
society
now.
Too, not in yes. all of society,
all
not
of society.
Just with the church,
oh,
even
no.
though it seems concentrated in the church for sure.
I'm definitely
but
talking the whole world.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Should we take another break? I brought her a Bloody Mary. She's never had a Bloody Mary.
This will be my first taste of
first
Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary.
So can you tell us what's in a Bloody Mary?
Vodka. And I cheated and just Bloody Mary mix. But let me tell you, if you have the time and the means and the patience and the skill, or know someone who does, because I do and it's awesome. If you make a Bloody Mary mix from scratch, you find a recipe online and make it from scratch, it's delicious.
I might try it.
The mix is good in a pinch.
As well.
Okay, so Bloody Mary mix. It's tomato juice and a whole lot of spices like pepper, like cracked pepper and Worcestershire and celery salt. So we're going to clean our palate with this. I think you're green and I'm pink.
I'm ready? Green, yeah.
All right, ready?
All right, let's bring it over here. One, cheers two, again. Three. Okay.
That's better.
It's not as bad.
No.
I thought it was going to be awful because I'm not a tomato juice person at all.
That's good.
But like to be frank, it tastes like tomato soup.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Like,
it's just cold.
It's alcoholic cold tomato soup, basically. Mm-hmm. It wasn't bad at all.
Well, if you ever I'll have like, another sip. If you like spicy V8 or like Clamato or any of those type of things, which I love all those things.
This is my first time. I'm so happy.
So much better than these little balls.
I'm hungry. I'll have some soup. I mean, Bloody Mary.
The Bloody Mary tastes better than balls, huh?
Absolutely. So, yeah, the Woo! Buzz balls are not my favorite. But if you're already drunk and in a pinch, then I would recommend it. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Is that all we have for today?
I hope so.
Well, I want to give you, we have a lot planned for next week because we've been planning and then this leak happened and then we've been pushing all of our plans.
Right.
So for next week.
So we've got a lot of great stuff for next week as well.
Yeah, we actually have already have some interviews that we've done lined up for you for next week that are just ready and waiting for you. We're going to be talking about conference since conference weekend is still coming up. We're going to be talking about agendas and the change that may or may not occur after agendas are pushed, kind of like we've kind of talked about this week.
Yeah.
So look forward to that. That's coming next week. We're really excited to bring you new guests and new voices on the show.
Yay!
Thanks!
All right, that's all we have for today. Be sure to check out the Mormon Happy Hour podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Patreon. Thanks for listening to the Mormon Happy Hour. Cheers!
It's Mormon Happy Hour.
Don't say my name.
It's illegal.
I have peach balls.
Juices.